The question was asked about a person who finds himself in a relationship with someone who calls himself his friend, and the person intrudes on his privacy, comes at times when he is not welcome, comes to places where he is not welcome, and just makes himself a part of this other person's life. And the question is, being that this is a Jewish person, how do we contend with that? How do we contend with someone that's entering our realm beyond where they're supposed to? So, I would like to address this question in a roundabout way. Not addressing the circumstance that you gave exactly, but addressing a circumstance that is more common. Most people don't have a friend that chases them when they go to another country. But I think that when we speak about the solution, so two things will happen. One, you'll say, "Aha, okay, I got that." And two, you'll say, "Well, that doesn't work." So I'm going to try to explain it. And after you initially think that's not going to work for me, take some time to digest it and think about it some more, and maybe it will work. And maybe you need to speak to someone else who has more experience than me, who could give you a different angle on it. The more common occurrence is when you have a couple that their in-laws are intruding into their lives. So let's make up an example. You have a couple, they're both very, very good, caring people, and they call up the parents and they ask, when is a good Shabbos to come to you guys? So the parents say, "This Shabbos is a good Shabbos to come to us." So the children say, "Okay." So they go to one side that Shabbos. And then 2 weeks later, they call again and they ask, "When is it a good Shabbos to come to you?" And they say, "This Shabbos is a good Shabbos to come." So again, they pack their bags and they go there for Shabbos. When they're there for Shabbos, they ask, "We're contemplating moving to this and this location. Would you guys be okay with it if we moved there?" And then we'll say, "Well, it would be very far, it would be very hard for us to travel there. We really wouldn't want you to move there." And after a series of conversations like this, the couple can find themselves in a situation where they're saying, "Why are they telling us what to do? Why does everyone feel like they can boss us around? Why is it that our parents don't realize that our lives are our own, and why do they tell us what to do all the time? They tell us which Shabbos to come. They tell us where we're supposed to live." Now, I've oversimplified things only a little bit. Really only a little bit. This is a very common occurrence. It usually occurs with couples that are very, very good and caring. So when a person is caring, it's very easy to constantly ask the other person what's good for you. And then we anticipate other people's reactions based upon our own behavior. So if two people are going to meet tomorrow, and let's say I'm supposed to meet with him, so I call him up and I say, "Tell me, when's good for you that we meet tomorrow?" And he says, "Okay, tomorrow at 2 o'clock we'll meet." And I suddenly feel slighted. Wait a second, I gave you the option, why didn't you give me the option? So I'll turn to him and I'll say, "One second, why didn't you ask me when it's good for me?" And he'll tell me, "Well, what do you mean?" You didn't tell me what's good for me is X, is it good for you? You said, what's good for you? So I answered that question. I told you, what's good for me? You guys getting the picture? I was once talking to a couple that was in this situation, and they were discussing whose parents were more at fault. Whose parents told them what to do more? Whose parents invaded their lives more? And I said to them, look, I'm sorry, I have bad news for you. I don't think either parent is at fault. I think you guys are at fault. If you are going to open your life and tell someone else, define for me what I should do, then that other person will define for you what you should do. So, we have a certain inborn autonomy. I am my own person. When I turn to someone else and say, when do you want us to meet tomorrow? I am telling him, you define for me when we will meet tomorrow. And just because I would like for him to respond and say, well, when's good for you, which is probably the way we would respond, right? If someone said to us, when would you like to meet tomorrow? We would probably respond, well, what's good for you, right? That's what we would do. Yeah. But there is not necessarily anything wrong with the response, let's meet tomorrow at 2. Because after all, what did you say? You said, when is good for you? So you asked me a question, I answered you. Now don't be upset with me that I answered you, that's the question you asked. In a relationship between children and their parents or children and their in-laws, so often it could go the same way. Children will ask parents, do you approve of this that I'm doing? And then the parents will say, no, I don't approve. And then the children get upset and say, why are you interfering in my life? And the parents will say, what do you mean? You asked. So this is a very common thing that occurs. I don't know how common it is in the non-from world, but in the religious world, where people are constantly trying to be good people and good to their in-laws as well, this is a fairly common occurrence. It's an occurrence that happens to people who are caring, but it's an occurrence that really happens when people let certain norms be trampled upon. Now, I'd like to take an example that Rav Twersky gives in one of his lectures. Rabbi Dr. Twersky gives the following example, which I think really brings out this point. A guy works hard, and his children tell him, Dad, you know, you haven't been on a trip with us in a long time. Could we go to Great Adventure? And the guy tells his children, sure, in 3 weeks I have a weekend that's off. That weekend we'll go to Great Adventure. 5 days before the weekend, his neighbor comes over and says, you know, I need to paint my garage this weekend. Could you please help me paint my garage? And he says, yes. And then he comes home and he looks at his kids and he remembers, hey, I promised them I'm going with them to Great Adventures. Now, he's displeased with himself. He's kicking himself, saying, why did I agree to paint this garage? And then he tells his wife and kids, you know, this weekend isn't going to work. Let's find another time that we could go to Great Adventure. And the kids are very upset. But Dad, you promised. And the wife is very upset. And she says, why aren't you taking them to Great Adventures? You told them you're taking them this weekend. And he becomes upset. And he says, why don't you understand? The guy asked me for help. I couldn't say no. I couldn't say no. I couldn't put limitations. So now, the father has the children upset at him, and the wife upset at him, and he's upset at the wife, and he's upset at the children, and he's upset at the neighbor. And come the weekend, he's going to go and paint that garage with the neighbor, and be cursing the neighbor under his breath every minute that he's doing it with the neighbor, because he hates the fact that he's doing it. But why is he doing it? Because he couldn't say no. A healthy person not only knows how to be helpful, but also knows how to put the boundaries for other people. Now, sometimes it's uncomfortable. You have a guest and he's sitting at the table and the time has come for the guest to leave. So you say, thank you very much. I really appreciate that you came. And you try to politely indicate that it's time to leave. And the guest indicates that he's not ready to leave. And he says, yeah, it was really good. And he sits and he lays back. And sometimes he could be a bigger boor and he could say, you guys have pistachios maybe or a beer? At which point, we have to mentally note this guest has just stepped over the boundaries of what is right into what is wrong. Now, if it won't be at any great expense of my family, so I have to decide, am I going to be patient? Am I going to forgo what I am entitled to and let this person trample over my rights and let him stay here and either I'll say I do or I don't have? If you are a rabbi and he's your disciple, so there's room to think about it. There's room to also put him in his place, depending on the age, depending on the relationship. Sometimes you have to tell the student, I really like you, and I really like having you over, but I don't think it's so nice to ask for things that weren't put on the table. If it all depends on the relationship, depends on many things. But assuming that isn't the relationship, assuming this is the guy that came to your house and has stayed there till 1 o'clock in the morning, and now you want to go to sleep, so this is where a healthy person learns to develop what we might call a thick skin. And then he has to be more blunt because the guest has become more blunt. And he has to say, look, I'm sorry for tonight, I think we're going to have to call it a night. And Bezat Hashem, we'll be in touch. And the guest might say, but I've been having such a good time. And the answer can be, yeah, you're right. Okay, let's sit down for another round. And here, what has the person done? He's let someone trample over him. He's let someone enter a realm where that person has no right to be. He's let someone enter his autonomy. And usually people who do this, it is a recurring weakness. Or the person can say, yeah, it's been really nice, but I'm sorry, that's it for tonight. It's interesting that before I was in the position as a rabbi with Baruch Hashem, hundreds of guys coming through our homes, I also found it difficult to be tougher with people. But part of what happens when you have more people coming through your home is you have more people trying to trample on your autonomy. So that means that the phone could ring at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I don't mind if the phone rings at 2 o'clock in the morning if it's something that validates the phone ringing at 2 o'clock in the morning. Someone could knock at the door at all hours of the night. It reaches a point that when I'm ill, I put a sign on the door, please don't knock, I am ill. All my neighbors come knocking, what's wrong? Because they're not used to someone putting a sign like that on their door. Most people don't have to. I do. But it also reaches a point where sometimes someone will knock on the door and I'll have to say, I'm sorry, I can't answer now. It's not something you'd like to do. But if there are people knocking on the door very often during the day, so I'm happy when people come, don't get me wrong. But there are going to be times when I can't. So the nicer way is to communicate with the person. Someone knocked on the door, you answer the door. But what happens when your children haven't had 2 minutes of peace and quiet with you? When your daughter's been chasing after you for 2 hours saying, Daddy, could you please help me put on my socks? And for 2 hours the phone's been ringing nonstop and the doors, people have been knocking on the door. At some point you say, the kid needs my time. So then someone comes knocking on the door and you say, look, I'm sorry, I can't answer now, I'm sorry. If you want to wait in 5-10 minutes, I'll be able to get to the door. And the guy at the other end of the door thinks, what's wrong with this guy? Whoever heard of something like that happening? But you have no choice. So we have to realize that in life, the more we permit people to enter our lives, the more they will enter. And we might look at them resentfully and say, well, why did you enter? And we have to recognize that we left them that room to enter. No one can enter beyond what I let him. And if it reaches a point, which I've seen, that the person will not leave unless you physically pick him up and take him out the door, so then those people shouldn't enter next time. You don't have to enter a brawl that time. That time you'll figure out what to do. But what you could do is ensure they don't enter your home.
So on Purim, the guys in the Machon know my door remains locked. I will not allow myself to enter a situation where guys enter my home and I'm in a situation that they're drunk, so I can't blame them, but they're not getting up and leaving. So I'm not going to let them trample over my house. It's very nice that they're drunk. Let them visit someone else who appreciates having drunks around his house. I don't. So guys know, 364 days a year, they're welcome in my house. On Purim, not. If you're sober, come, let's sit down, we'll talk to Victoria, you'll have some cake, you'll have some coffee. A lot of guys come on Purim. But before I unlock the door, I talk to the people. And they know, all the guys know. We have a conversation with the door locked. Are you drunk or are you sober? Is everyone in the party that's coming drunk or is everyone sober? And only after I know that everyone's standing there sober will I let them in the house. So it took me time to develop that thick skin. But after a person's been trampled on, a person has one of two choices. He could vent his anger outwardly and say, why did you trample on me? Or he could say, no, I want to have a good relationship with this person. And the only way I could do it is if I'm going to teach him the boundaries. So sometimes with people that the relationship has already evolved, we have to go to the opposite extreme. So sometimes I'll tell couples, go to the opposite extreme with your parents. And after you've done that for a half a year or 2 months or however long it takes, depending on however long this has been going on, you'll be able to find the happy medium. People always want to find the happy medium a day after they've gone to the opposite extreme. Because it's very hard. There's a reason why people find themselves in this rut, because it's natural to them. But people have to know that in order to reach equilibrium, in order to straighten something that's bent one way, you have to bend it the other way in order to find equilibrium. So with regard to this specific friend, it's going to be tough because he's accustomed to trampling. But it's not impossible. Sometimes people are tempted to proclaim, I will not let you trample over my life. You will not stay here when you're not welcome. I'm a big believer in the saying that says, actions speak louder than words. When a person proclaims, you will not trample over my life, he's already let himself be trampled upon. One has to take the actions and not make the proclamations. So the actions means that if this person has come on vacation and you don't want him there, so you say, hey Chaim, it's nice being with you. I like being with you. In the future, please set up with me if you plan on joining us on vacation. This time, I'm sorry we didn't plan for it and it's not going to work. So see if you could join some other group. I'm sorry you came out to Quebec or to I don't know where when you thought you'd be able to join us. And if we would have planned it well, then it could have worked, but this time it's not going to work. And there's no reason we should feel guilty. What he did is wrong. So now he's going to pay the price for it. Okay, so that's part of whenever a person does something wrong, there are consequences. So I told you, the first thing that's going to happen when I say this is you're going to think, gee, that's right. And after you'll think for a few minutes, you'll say, yeah, but that doesn't work for me. Because it's not easy. The most difficult thing for a person to do is change something that he's accustomed to doing. To change a habit of behavior with other people is very, very difficult. Chazal say that the greatest people could not do this. Ezu Gibo, who is considered a powerful person, more powerful than all the powerful people you could think of, HaKoveshet Yitzor, one who conquers his Yetzer. He conquers his desire, his tendencies. So that means he's greater than Napoleon, because Napoleon won wars. He was brilliant. But we don't know that he ever conquered himself. Conquering ourselves is more difficult than conquering external things. So it requires more strength. I'm telling you very simply to change. Realistically, it is very difficult. To the extent that most people think it's impossible. It's not impossible. And part of what a person has to do is think, what are my choices in life? If I let this continue this way, here's an example of something that has nothing to do with religion. It's a way of life which will harm a person in the long run. So a person has to think of the consequences and then think how to adopt new behaviors. Fair enough?